Hi everyone, Jason here. On May the 14th, Stephen and myself will be appearing with the one and only Mark Lewison at the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary, Dublin. We're going to be celebrating 60 years of A Hard Day's Night, and we would love you to join us. For tickets, go to paviliontheatre.ie or nothingisrealpod.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Nothing Is Real, a podcast about the Beatles. Everybody thinks they know the Beatles, but how much do we really know? My name's Jason Carty.
My name's Stephen Cockcroft.
And we're live on tape from Dublin and Belfast. This is a bonus episode. It's a little snippet of a recent conversation that we had. And who did we have that conversation with, Stephen?
Danny Sywell and Fernando Perdomo.
Yes. So they are currently out and about promoting a brand new release, which is called Ram On, the 50th anniversary tribute to Paul and Linda McCartney's Ram. And we were lucky enough to get them talking to us. And we're going to give you a snippet of that conversation now as a bonus. But we did do a second kind of wider ranging, longer conversation with Denny on his own. And he kind of covered everything, didn't he, Steve?
He did. So really talking about the Ram sessions, but also his work in Wings and all the way up to Live and Let Die.
Yes, and his you know, his relationship with McCartney up until into the 21st century. So we're putting that up for subscribers on Acast Plus. So if you go to nothingisrealpod.com, you can learn about how to go and get that episode if you want. But this is a snippet of the conversation that we had with the two of them about the new album Ram On, the 50th anniversary tribute to Paul and Linda McCartney's Ram. Enjoy. Because as I understand it, Paul, he's not on the album, but he's given his kind of background salute of approval. And that must be great for everybody involved.
I have a funny thing I say about that. You know, when I first gave Denny the idea of doing this, he was totally on. But the thing about Denny is that he is a responsible adult, being of his age, and he decided to text Paul and said, "Hey, you know," he literally said, "A friend of mine has got his recording studio and he wants to do a new version of Ram and he could get the original sounds. Is this something that's cool? You know, can we do this?" And, you know, Paul wrote back five words, but five words from Paul in a text message on a phone in front of my face about something I'm involved with sent chills down my spine. And it was like, go ahead, have fun. You know, something like that. Something as simple as that. And that was the fuel that, I mean, we started the project on December 13th. We started laying down the drums and we were done by mid-February. No, even earlier, maybe like beginning of February. And it was just like having that energy of Paul, you know, giving us the blessing was rocket fuel. Cause we were just like, you know, oh my God, he's going to hear this, but this is going to be a lot of fun and it's really cool. And again, his entire thing was have fun. And we did.
Yeah. We really, you just have to do it, don't you?
Oh yeah. No, it had to happen at that point.
And some of the tracks, we just obviously, we'd start with a click track, but obviously it didn't have the same feel. So I would just play drums along to the original CD. We had the absolute feel and tempo of the original CD and then build out from there.
Yeah.
And it's obviously, for Fernando, it's obviously an album that means a lot to you.
I was 8 years old when I first heard it. And I always tell everybody that I trained my entire life to do this because it's a record that's very special to me. It's a record that shaped my ears. You know, it's like, There's a technique that a lot of engineers use, especially live sound. They'll put up in a CD that they're really used to. And it seems like a lot of engineers, they like the Nightfly by
Donald Fagen.
That Donald Fagen record, which has drum machines, so it automatically is a no-no for me. But they always pull out, it's a wonderful day to be free. And I'm, you know, it's like it always happened when I'd be on tour and I'd walk in and I'd hear that. I'd be like, oh, they're tuning the sound system. Ram influenced every fiber of my being, from songwriting to guitar tones to the way the vocal is placed. And something that's really interesting about Ram is there's a video that went viral recently about it could be the first indie album. It's cool to see all the different genres represented and also to see the intense scene changes, like Too Many People being this classic rock guitar anthem going into Three Legs, which is like a porch. Like when I always think of Three Legs as Paul's blues man song, where it's like, I can imagine him being this old blues man on a rocking chair with a dog next to him playing the guitar.
Well, when I walk my horse upon a hill, I walk my horse upon. When I walk my horse upon a hill, when I walk my horse upon. When I lay me down, will my love love me still?
You know, I remember as a child, like, listening to this record going, man, that's really bizarre, but it works. And there was something about the way that it goes from heavy rock to blues to a ukulele track, you know, which that's the thing. It's like when you think of the ukulele in rock music in 1971, it's like, is he laugh? You know, it's like a Tiny Tim, you know, Tiny Tim was the ukulele. And it's almost like a novelty instrument. And I feel like Ram On is one of the first times a ukulele was used in an actual sad, melancholy song. Because there's an old joke. Steve Martin once said, you can't play a sad song in a band.
I've seen him do that on Carson. It's very funny.
Yeah, and it actually inspired my friend Gail Skidmore to write sad songs on the banjo. Whenever she plays, you know, people expect it's going to be super happy, you know, and she'll start playing a song that will just make you want to just, you know, pull the covers over your head and cry, you know. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, it goes to Ram On, which then goes to this, you know, amazing Brian Wilson Beach Boys type thing with Dear Boy, into a, you know, multi-part epic, you know, insane composition like Uncle Albert, into Smile Away, which is you know, like a 50s style, you know, you know, like blues type thing. And it's really interesting because what Paul taught me was, at the time, let's say 1988, all the music I was exposed to on MTV and stuff like that, you would hear Bon Jovi song and then the next single sounded exactly the same. And then the next single sounded exactly the same. Guns N' Roses, you know, one song sounds exactly like the next. And the thing about Paul is that he taught me that you don't have to put out an album of singles. An album is an organic piece of work that is, you know, it takes you somewhere. And you pop in, when you pop on Ram, and you go from Too Many People to Backseat of My Car, it's a journey through an entire movie. It's like a film. It's like, imagine if 007 was all chase scenes. It would have no impact. You know, imagine if a comedy only was punchlines. It would be, that'd have no impact. You have to have a story. You have to have a running line. And the thing about it is that the Beatles had already set this level of, you know, we weren't just doom, da, da, doom, da, doom, da, da. Yeah. They went from that to Eleanor Rigby to Revolution 9 to the second side of Abbey Road. And Paul proved on his records that he was one of the main impetuses to the Beatles' versatility. Because Paul is an incredible songwriter, but also his voice was at his peak in 71. That was one of the hardest things about this record, was casting the album singer-wise. And we brought in a lot of incredible people. And, you know, Denny was like, look, I've got to make the final choices. And we had multiple people try each song. And there was a lot of situations where there was like, oh, man, this guy would have been great from a marketing standpoint or from a, you know, story standpoint, but somebody else beat them out. And really, it's an incredible process, because Denny was there 5 feet away from Paul singing these songs, watching this behemoth not just sing these songs, but play these songs perfectly and create these songs. And one of the things that blew my mind was when Denny told me that the backing track for Halsey, for Uncle Albert Amo Halsey, is one take all the way through. Drums, the drum guitar and acoustic guitar and electric guitar all the way through with a guide vocal.
Yeah, that was something I actually meant to ask. I had always assumed that was recorded in sections. And, you know, that these little sections were recorded and then Paul took them away and stitched them together and got the orchestral backing. Yeah. You know, that's a George Martin arrangement, I think.
Well, the George Martin arrangement for the strings, but that's Paul's.
But that was just recorded straight through.
Straight through. But, you know, then the overdubs and the strings. And
yeah.
But there's a recording. I think I've heard of recording where it's just like Paul either on a piano or an acoustic guitar, and then freaking Hugh McCracken on an electric guitar and Denny on drums. And that's the track that we hear in the background that everything was overdubbing.
I honestly believe, I think if Uncle Albert, if he ever pulled it out live, I think people would lose their minds. He's never really played it in the live arena. I'm really interested to hear what you have to say there, Fernando, because first of all, I think if you listen to McCartney 3, he is still very much a guy who thinks in albums. That album exactly has a beginning, a middle, and an end with deep, deep feeling in the middle.
Who starts an album with an instrumental in 2021?
Paul does. He's Paul.
And that's not just an instrumental, but a kind of a jam. And again, that's Paul going back to the, hey, I have a new band and put on a new album, and the first thing you hear is Mumbo, which is a jam, you know, and it's really interesting to see that Paul is always testing you and saying, okay, look, I'm not going to give you what you want. I'm going to give you what I feel is going to be the best statement that I'm going to look back on and say, that was me in 2021. That was me in 1971. That was me in 1972. Even records that have not stood the test of time, like Press to Play and Pipes of Peace.
Oh, Stephen loves Press to Play.
I will not have a word said against Press to Play.
I love Press to Play as much as it didn't hit me for a while because of the production, you know, being so sterile, and also being so heavily dominated by session musicians. Yeah. It still is an incredible record compared to everything else in 86. Because, my God, 86, 87, 88 are what I consider the weakest time in record.
One of Jason's theories, Jason is a great man for a theory, is that, you know, a lot of those albums that, I mean, you know, Ram was a huge was a huge commercial success. You know, you had that hit single, the album got to number one, Admiral Halsey got to number one, but it wasn't critically acclaimed at the time. Wildlife wasn't critically acclaimed at the time, but Jason's idea is that you can more easily appreciate it in retrospect, you know, where you can see where they fit in the arc of the career. And it's this point that we were talking to Denny about where Wings is sort of building up to what I think is the pinnacle, which is Live and Let Die. You know, you can see the journey looking back where you when you're in the middle of it as a member of the record buying public that's just come off Abbey Road, that Paul's career really doesn't make sense when you're in the middle of it. But looking back, you can see the logic of what he was doing. You know, the university tour, the building up the band, the getting that organic sound.
Man, I mean, in many ways, Paul having to live up to the Beatles is kind of the same way, like when you're the son of someone, or, you know, and it's like, oh my God, you know, it's the unbeatable, And how do you come back after being in the greatest band of all time? And Paul did it the right way by, putting together a new band and going on tour playing, Buddy Holly covers in cafeterias of colleges. Paul did it again with Run Devil Run, and with Cobra B, and all the times that he's, or better example, the Firemen, Electric Arguments, it's more than the stripper music that he did in 89 or whatever. I actually just recently rediscovered Strawberry Ocean Ships for us. And I've only been to a strip club twice, but I can
two more times than me.
the coolest stripper ever stripped to that record, because it literally sounds stripper music, but it's really it. But again, Paul isn't just gonna be the dancing monkey for the money. He is gonna get something really interesting while still preserving that genius. And it's a really cool thing. But this is something important. When we first announced this record, I saw two different reactions, either very excited or why the hell does this exist? And the kind of the cool thing about Paul is that generally he's never treated with indifference. You either absolutely go gaga for it, aka Band on the Run, aka Flowers in the Dirt, aka Chaos and Creation, that's like, oh my god, he's back, he's incredible, or you love to hate it, like the way people go crazy about Wonderful Christmas Time or freaking Fuck You and stuff like that. The thing that makes the difference between a great artist and an artist that just falls out of interest is the fact that when they put out stuff, it creates discussion and it creates interest, because it's either extremely positive or extremely negative, but there's none of that middle ground. And it's like, I feel like, a lot of the problems that I'm seeing with a lot of artists these days is they're super popular, then they put something else and no one talks about it because it's good, but it's a rehash of what they've done. The thing about Paul is, it was shocking to see him follow up Abbey Road with McCartney, an album full of instrumentals, full of experimental tracks. I mean, the goddamn album ends with a freaking drum solo with heavy breathing on it. And I love that, because as a kid, my first love was the Beatles when I was 6 years old. And then I started going to flea markets with my family, and basically they would give me $5 every Sunday, and instead of buying toys, I bought records. And $5 back in 1988 would get you 10 records. So I amassed a huge collection by the time I was, in high school. And I luckily found a lot of the good McCartney stuff. And it was really interesting to see, I get McCartney, I had heard Maybe I'm Amazed, and to pop the record on and hear bizarre things like, freaking Mama Miss America and Hottest Son and Krina Kora and even like Man We Was Lonely and stuff like that. It's not what you expect, because again, that's the sign of a true artist.
I have to admit, I had a totally different experience, but same kind of timeline as you. I'm really interested to hear your experience, because I was a kind of a young teenage Beatle fan in the late 80s. And I thought, well, once I bought all the albums, I better buy some Paul albums. And I bought a couple of them together. So I remember getting McCartney and Ram and Red Rose Speedway, and I couldn't figure them out. I couldn't unlock them straight away, because I thought it would just be more of the same. And it obviously isn't more of the same. It's a totally different trip. And you have to, once you get the key to unlock what's happening, It's fantastic. But as you say, some people just don't get the key, and they have like a negative opinion about it. And I'm feeling you're missing the point. This is just somebody following the muse, doing their own thing, and you just gotta go with the process. And once you kind of plug into what's happening, they are great albums. But it didn't happen for me immediately, I have to admit, because it's so. it's so kind of personal in a way, some of the things he's doing, even if they're abstract, they're still personal to him.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that, you know, what an interesting career, because man, I mean, he's taken some incredible left turns. Even Wings was a left turn, you know. Yeah. He didn't have to start a band. He didn't have to, you know, fly a New York session drummer all the way to Scotland and take him under his wing. And, you know, he could have found anybody over there. But that's the thing is that Paul, he built his career on relationships, and he was very loyal. And he was also, for someone that seems like, you know, a lot of Beatles biographers view him as, you know, the ego of the Beatles. For someone who seemed to have the biggest ego in the Beatles, he is the one who always relied on, you know, on collaboration.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And
well, this is one of the things we said to Danny at the beginning, which was just it's 50% of what Paul does. It's about the relationship that he has with the people around him, with the players. You know, you could be the best musician in the world, but if you don't have that sort of spark, or you don't have that personal interaction, it's not going to work. So can we expect this to be turned into a live gig at some point?
We're working on it. We're actually in the process now of talking to the musicians that are on the record that are live in LA about getting together and jamming soon, and seeing if we could do some type of thing.
Just before you came on, Danny had agreed to come and play in Dublin. So
I have never been to Ireland. I want to be in Ireland. I want to play Ireland. I want to party in Ireland.
We're gonna have to buy 2 pints of Guinness, Jason.
Oh yeah, dude. I barely drink, but I love Guinness because
You'll get on fire with Jason because he barely drinks, and then Danny and I can go somewhere else.
I haven't had a drink in 30 years.
Oh no, you're on your own, Steve, and you're drinking for four.
In fact, when I did a gig in Ballina, it was with the World Classic Rockers Band. We went from Shannon Airport up to Ballina. It was like a 2-hour drive, but we turned it into 7 hours because they stopped in every village and had a pint, you know, in every pub. So I was told when you're in Ireland, you have to have a pint of Guinness in Ireland because they give it to you. It's so good they give it to you in the hospital. So every time I went and I had my Diet Coke, and we had this little Irish guy with us. He was our guide kind of, and he kept looking at me. He said, "Now let me get this straight, sir. You mean you don't drink at all?" And I said, "No, I don't drink at all." He goes, "Oh, you must be one hell of a man." I love it.
But it's you. It's not necessary to stop at every pub. It's not every pub, you know.
It's no harm, I guess.
It does no harm, you know. You know, my grandmother used to drink a bottle of stout once a day. Every evening she had that. She lived to be 35. No, she lived to be right up.
This is fantastic. I know we've kept you for a long time, but
one of the things I wanted to mention is I asked Denny. I'm like, you know, Paul was famous for always, you know, whenever the drummer would leave the drum kit, he would get on the drums. And I said, at any point during Ram, did Paul sit down at the drums and say, play it like this? And I was surprised when Denny told me that every drum beat he came up, that you hear him play, on Ram, on Wildlife, on Red Rose Speedway, on Live and Let Die. That's all his creations. And only once Paul said, "Well, try something different," and that was for Admiral. Wow. He just said, "Hey, well, instead of playing a beat, can you just break it up a little bit?" And he came up with this amazing part. So it's really cool that Paul really collaborated and wasn't like heavy-handed and said, yeah, "Okay, this song is called Too Many People, and this is the beat you're going to play." No, it was a real collaboration. And Paul put the trust in a guy that he had just met, because they recorded another day. He said 3 days after his audition. So
every band is only as good as their drummer. This is the universal truth. Drummers are the best people, and you cannot have, no great band can survive with a bad drummer. This is just
it's very true, because a good band with a shit drummer is not as good as a okay band with a great drummer.
Exactly.
Because you have to have that pulse, and you have to, it keeps it together. It's really important to have a solid foundation, because if everything else is okay, the drums will make it sound great. If everything else is great and the drums sound like crap, it really comes across bad. I have to say, Denny at 78 sounds exactly as Denny at 28. He's better. I mean, he's just got it, and he still hits the drums very hard and very good, solid. And
I had 50 years to think about it.
Yeah,
it's all been building up to this moment. And so when is the album out? It's coming out on
14th, which is happened to be the same day that Paul's putting out his remaster, because it is 50 years to the day.
It's not a
competition here. It's just very important. It's the most important Ram Day in history, 50 years
of Ram Day. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the Half Speed remaster that's coming.
I got an advanced copy. No, actually, a lot of people don't understand what Half Speed mastering is. It's basically, if you master the record at a different tape speed, it creates a bigger bad bandwidth when you speed it up. It's the same thing that you, if you record a, if, I don't know if you guys are musicians, if you had a four track machine,
I had a Tascam four track. Yeah.
Yeah. The faster the speed is, the better quality, because then when you slow it down, it's like that. Again, it's the half speed mastering that makes it a bigger wideband thing. So you're not going to put it on in here slow motion.
I was going to say we can just now have an hour while you play us the Half Speed Master over.
We'll put headphones on. But is there? I know Ram On is coming out on CD. Is there any plans that you might have a vinyl release
to make it come out on time? The plan is, if it sells well enough, and it will, we'll do vinyl for Christmas. You know,
but we're pushing it very hard on the. I have to say, it's got a lot of traction.
A lot of people talking about it.
Not least because Denny's doing three interviews a day, you know.
So the material's good.
Can I ask one more question? Because I'm really curious, because when I listened to it, we got a pre-release and I was listening to it and I wasn't sure what to expect. I wasn't sure, was it going to be reinterpretations or not? But there's some really faithful sounds on the album, which is really striking. And I particularly was amused by the way Ram On, all the kind of the piano glissandos and those kind of studio accident noises are recreated. Was there any particular moment on the album where you couldn't figure out what you were trying to put back together? Because obviously with recording, you know, the final mix, sometimes there's magic there that you just can't get in between.
That's a good point. This is something I have to say as a response to a certain amount of people that have said, "I don't recognize the names on this record. I'm not excited by the lineup." There's a difference between Ram On and other tribute records. Every person on the record is not just a Beatles fan, not just a Paul fan, not just a Wings fan. They are Ram fans. And everybody on the record has distinct Ram memories and distinct Ram influences. And when it came to putting this record together, nobody really had to learn the songs. Everybody kind of already had these songs in our DNA. And going through the record and recreating a lot of the sounds, it was important to us that not just the sounds, but the vibe was there. And man, I mean, it was a lot of fun to dissect it, because even though Ram is a, it's one of my favorite sounding records of all time. And a lot of it goes down to the fact that, man, I mean, compared to a lot of other recordings, there's no synthesizers. There's not a lot of organ. There's not a lot of like artificial anything. So we wanted to make sure that it's all real drums. It's all real instruments. Aside from a couple of keyboard overdubs, it's all we didn't even use synthesizers for organ sounds and stuff like that. It's real sounds. It's real roads and stuff and real everything.
Can I ask a very technical musical question?
Yes.
Were you able to find a 1971 New York City phone book?
Here's the problem. I found out that you're not supposed to sell phone books on eBay because of personal information. And number two, even if you do, the 1971 Manhattan phone book was designed by Peter Max, so it's a collector's item.
Ah.
So, unfortunately...
It must be, I mean, it must be sort of that thick.
It is. Yeah. Well, there was a joke that when Billy Amendola played the phone books, we had to double him because Denny was like, I think he used a Brooklyn phone book. But we got the sound, but it was just like... There was a certain magic to whatever phone book Denny used, and you should have kept it, dude.
I was gonna say you're the archivist. You have the acetate labels, but you didn't keep the phone book. That was bad.
That's fantastic.
That's an important phone book too. It probably has Laura Nero's number and David Geffen's number and the Night Stalker's number, all sorts of other stuff. But whatever. But yeah, 1971, man. What an incredible year for music. What an incredible era to be a part of, Denny. And for you to be this session drummer that walked into an audition in an undisclosed location on a crappy rental drum set. And that I didn't realize, too, that when you auditioned, you didn't know you were auditioning for McCartney. So you just being natural, acting natural, scored the gig of a lifetime and played on the soundtrack of our lives. I mean, these, even people that aren't huge McCartney fans know Live and Let Die and My Love. These are earthquakes in the history of rock. I mean, these songs changed everything.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I partnered up with this man.
That's the thing is that it was really cool to see Denny inspired and to see Denny having a great time. And, man, we have a good chemistry. And I want to do more. There's a couple more records that we could do.
I was going to say, are we going to have a 50th anniversary of Wildlife and Red Rose Speedway?
The full double. Get them all.
Why not? Well, as long as you promise to come back on the podcast when these records,
Of course. And the thing is that my God, I adore his drumming, and I like the fact that he really brought the spirit of the recordings. So that's another thing that makes this tribute record not so much a tribute record, because every living musician on the record is on it aside from Paul, because obviously Linda and Hugh McCracken are gone, but we were able to find Marvin Stamm, who played the original trumpet solo on
Uncle Albert.
Funny, because I just Googled him and I found his website, and it had a little page that said contact me, and I put them together, and they and Denny and Marvin talked for the first time since then. And we found, and it turns out that Marvin and Dave Spinoza live in the same town, and Dave Spinoza used the same guitar he used on Another Day on our new version, and Denny used the same snare drum that he used back then. So
is this your father's snare drum? Did I read that somewhere?
It is. All right, I'll show it.
Bring it out.
Oh, great!
That's incredible.
I have it right here.
Hey, look at that.
He doesn't have the same underwear he wore back then, though.
That is such a cool thing, and it was your dad's.
Leedy Broadway. I can see the engraved hoops.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at that.
Gotta be the 20s or the 30s or something like that.
I was going to say, it's like a kind of big band.
It's really a great drum, yeah.
All right, Denny, tell them the story about the drum kit you used on a rail. This was a mind blower.
The audition went down, and my friend Franco Ippolito, who has a pro drum in New York, called me up and he said, the Museum of Famous People in New York is going out of business and they're having an auction. They have the Beatles drum set from the Shea Stadium show. And I'm going to the auction. Do you want them? I want the snare drum, but you can buy the toms and the bass drum if I get it. I said, well, I'm not a millionaire, but see what you can do. So he calls me up and he says, I got the set, man. I'm keeping the snare drum, but you can have the two tom-toms and a bass drum for $300. Sold!
Wow.
So 2 days later, I'm in the studio at CBS 52nd Street. Paul walks in, comes over, shakes my hand, says hello. He says, you ready to go? And he looks at the drum, does your drums, and he does a double take on the drums. Left the Beatles head on it and everything.
Wow, that's fantastic.
It was meant to be. It was meant to be.
And I found that there's a video, there's a photo of him cutting RAM, and I saw that Blue Oyster Pearl, and I was just like, wow. He's right. Holy crap. I mean, not that I never distrusted Denny, but I was just like, when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, it is true.
Where are they now, those drums?
I sold the drums back to the drum shop because I bought my first set of Gretsch after that. I just fell in love with the Gretsch sound.
Yeah.
They were good, but they weren't good for all uses, if you know what I mean, playing all kinds of music. And I really could get any sound that I wanted out of the Gretsches. So I sold it back to Frank, but I kept the head.
Good man, good idea.
And the head turns out that it's worth, you know, somebody just paid $2 million for one of this set.
I was gonna say, it must be worth more than $300 now.
I don't know where it is. I had it at my mother's house. I had it at my Uncle Bunny's apartment in New York. I had it in a cartage place in the city. And when I went looking for it, it wasn't anywhere. I don't know what happened.
Oh,
to
it. No.
It'll be somewhere. It'll be in a storage unit with the two-track of the band on the run with us.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, right.
It's the last place you look.
It's all in the one place, you know?
Fucking brilliant, Mike.
but one last thing is I am a huge fan of Denny, and I love Paul's drumming too, but I really wish Denny would have cut Ben on the Run, because when I first heard those songs, I heard them somehow I didn't find Ben on the Run until after I found Wings Over America. So I first heard those songs on Wings Over America with a big full sound, and I remember being disappointed by especially the drum sound. That studio in Lagos was a complete dumpster fire, and they didn't get a good drum sound.
I can see where this is going. Where this is going. We're going to get a 50th the Denny Sywell version of
Band on the Run
in 2023.
We've done it several times. I've done it with Denny Lane at the Beatle Fests. Denny Lawrence Juber and the Liverpool band. You know, we did it several times.
And then Denny's version of Venus and Mars, and Denny's version of Down, and Denny's version of Press to Play.
Hey, that closes everything out.
Here, while we're on this subject now, and let me put a shameless plug in for my jazz trio.
Oh, do?
I have two records out, one called Reckless Abandon and another one called Boomerang. And Boomerang looks like this. This is my mouse pad from Boomerang. But on Reckless Abandon, which came out in 2012, it's on all of streaming services. We did five McCartney songs in a jazz genre.
Is that, I think I've heard Live and Let Die. You did Live and Let Die?
Yes, we did that on Boomerang. We did it like a big, it's an organ trio, so it's a music with a beat to it, you know. So I sent it to Paul after we first cut it, you know, and I had Al Schmidt mix it. So it was just really well done and everything. Paul's just, he couldn't stop talking. He loved it. He really loved it. I told him, why don't you play that as your play on music when you're going on stage? He said, yeah, it's not my idea, so it ain't going to go.
Well, people should check that out. If they go to DennySiwell.com, there's loads of information about those albums there. They're from they're well worth checking out. And gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Ram On, the 50th anniversary tribute to Paul and Linda McCartney's Ram, is out, surprisingly enough, on the 50th anniversary of Ram, the 14th of May. 2021 via Spirit of Unicorn Music, and it features such fantastic people. I'm going to look at a list here. Carney Wilson, Eric Dover from Jellyfish, Joey Santiago from the Pixies, Durga McBroom, who's worked with Pink Floyd, David Johnson from Elton John's band, Will Lee from the Fab Four, who's just this fantastic Beatles tribute band, and he was Paul Schaefer's bassist for years as well. Fantastic group of people, and we've heard it, and it's quite the treat to hear some of the original people and some of the new people make this fantastic album. Yet another thing for another 50 years.
Yes. Yeah, it's a real pleasure. And we are so proud of it. And so far, the reaction has been incredible. So thank you so much for believing in this. And thank you so much for interviewing us on it. You know,
I had a soft spot in my heart for Ireland.
Well, I was going to say, we're going to hold you to that promise of coming to Ireland as soon as the world opens up again.
A few more jabs and then we'll all hang out together. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Take care in LA.
Have a wonderful day, guys.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening to Nothing Is Real. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, why not become a member? You'll get access to ad-free content, bonus episodes, and so much more. Follow the link in the show notes, sign up on Acast Plus, or visit our website, nothingisrealpod.com.